You're listening to the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast.
Hello, it's Steve. I hope you're good. I am back to chat about everything going on with Eurovision in the world because things are moving so fast right now. We know which countries are going to be in which semi-final thanks to the allocation draw, which was hosted in Liverpool. And more acts and their songs are being revealed all the time. Lots of national finals happening right now too. This is a big episode, so there's no waffle, as we say today. Loads of guests for you. Let's get to it and tell you who is coming up. Give them both a banana. It's Keith and Jim, because the Subwoofer guys have finally been revealed.
And we were like, well, should we be from space? Yeah, be from space. Cool. All right. Should we have an astronaut that's a DJ? Yeah, fine. Cool. And it was just the more ridiculous we could make it, the more people seemed to like it.
We'll be catching up with Joker Out from Slovenia and Iru from Georgia.
I really want the song to be very strong, you know, to give like very strong vibes.
This is obvious. You want to show off your voice, don't you?
Oh, yes. Of course. I just want it to be the best song from Georgia.
Some Eurovision experts are coming on, and John's Tears plays Eurovision on the spot.
You're listening to the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast with Steve Holden. United by Music.
I guess a good place to start is with who's been revealed since our last episode, because Ireland have picked Wild Youth with the song We Are One, and at Benidorm Fest in Spain, it was Blanca Paloma who was selected and will hope to make an impression after the success of Chanel last year. Now, we've heard Slovenia's entry, Carpe Diem, by Joker Out, and Iru won the Voice of Georgia to represent her country. We know who will be singing for the Czech Republic, for Armenia, for Greece, and for Austria. And congratulations to Alessandra, who will represent Norway with her song Queen of Kings. Now, she won Melody Grand Prix and will be on this podcast at a later date. But something else major happened on that night in Oslo, because as you probably know by now, last year's representatives, Subwoofer, finally revealed who they were. And sadly, no, they are not really space wolves from the moon called Keith and Jim. The masks came off to reveal Norwegian singer and former Idol runner-up Gaute Ormesson and British boy band legend Ben Adams. It was, in their words of their new single, the worst kept secret. But I am so pleased to say they are both with me right now on the podcast. Hi guys, how are you feeling?
Great, thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Great.
What a moment.
It was crazy.
It was, I think it came across quite, I watched it afterwards, I think it came across quite well on TV, but if you were actually in the arena, I mean, as soon as we went to take off that left glove, it was deafening, the sound. It was like, it made the whole floor rumble. So it was kind of one of those like goosebump moments for everyone, I think. Everyone was just super excited about it, which was fun.
Everyone I talked to after the show was also talking about the loudness of the crowd when we were taking off the gloves.
Were you nervous to finally take things off, or relieved?
I was absolutely nervous because I think I look really good with my mask on. But, I'm 40 this year, so I was a little worried how will this look when I take off the mask in front of everyone. It's no problem for Ben. He's born like a boy band baby face.
Thanks, Gatter. I'll pay you later.
You made such an impact at Eurovision. You were everywhere. You've been everywhere on TikTok, over socials. You did really well at the contest. You came 10th. Everybody knows your song, but you two have been anonymous. And yes, okay, some people have speculated who you might be and some people think they've known. But until Saturday, it was still a secret. How many people were actually in the inner circle that knew who you two were for sure, for definite?
Well, the circle was getting bigger and bigger. So that's why we made a song called The Worst Kept Secret.
Yeah, and also, you know, remember that Norway is a very small country. I mean, to be honest, I thought everybody kind of knew, But I was more surprised afterwards by people who genuinely didn't know. Because as far as, you know, if you've ever heard an A1 song or ever heard one of Gauta's song, it's very, very clear. You know, our voices are quite distinct. It's very clear that it's us. And even like body shapes, and all my family knew instantly. I didn't tell them, and they just like, that's you. And I was like, ah, yeah, it is.
Gauta, how was Eurovision for you? How did you find being anonymous, having to wear a disguise at all times? How was that whole experience?
There's no words to describe everything. It was just madness. It was the most crazy thing we've ever done.
I mean, I think for everybody on the team, not just us, I mean, nobody had ever done this kind of thing before. I mean, I guess there was Lordi, wasn't there, which was the sort of rock act that did kind of dress up. But the whole secrecy surrounding us and Subwoofer was really kept very, very tightly. I mean, we went to the airport dressed a bit like RoboCop with like visors on and masks and got sneaked through all the security things so that people didn't check our passports. And even when we got there, I mean, you know, the reporters all outside the hotel and sneaking in and out of the venue. We had passes with our faces on it that we couldn't show. We could only show like one security guard in secret and stuff. So it was really quite, everyone was treating it a little bit like, oh my God, the president's here. You know, it was that kind of like, was that important for everyone to keep the secret up?
Whose idea was it originally?
It was both of ours. I mean, we basically started this whole project as we went to a songwriting camp for MGP, which is Norway's show into Eurovision. And the brief of the day was to write the most ridiculous song you could possibly think of, really think outside the box. So that's what we did. We just wrote just what we thought was the most hilarious song. We just laughed all day. And then when we'd finished, we thought, oh, well, that was fun, but I guess maybe a bit of a waste of a day. I hope tomorrow is better. But the funny thing was that, you know, we had such a good time. We thought the song was really funny, really catchy, but had no idea what other people would think. And at the end of all these songwriting days, you play the songs to everybody else that's on the writing camp. Other people thought that it was hilarious and really funny and wanted to hear it again and all that kind of stuff. So I think at that point we thought, oh, maybe there's something in this song. That was when the search began to try and find singers that would, or an artist that would sing it. And, you know, strangely enough, also nobody wanted to sing a song called Give That Wolf a Banana. So then NRK came to us and said, you know, would you like to do it yourselves? And we said no. And then they said, well, what about if you did it under masks? You know, masked singers very big right now. Think about bands like Daft Punk. Then we started thinking about it and we were like, yeah, I guess it could work, but like, what masks? Why? What are we doing? We're like, and then it was just spiraled out of control by then. And then the more ridiculous ideas we came up with, the more NRK just said, yeah. Yeah, what? And we were like, well, should we be from space? Yeah, be from space. Cool. All right. Should we have an astronaut that's a DJ? Yeah, fine. Cool. And it was just the more ridiculous we could make it, the more people seemed to like it.
If things went really bad, we could just never take off the masks. Problem solved. But at some point I realized that Jim was actually more popular than Gauta. So that's why. Is there any point with this mask anymore?
Everything just seemed to gel so well.
As you say, it looked like a very well-oiled machine, which by the end of Subwoofer, it is now a very well-oiled machine. We now know what we're doing. But we certainly didn't know what we were doing when it began. It's all been sort of a happy mistake. And every time, you know, we came up with a problem, we would just solve it by going, well, what about this? You know, even when NRK were like, okay, well, obviously we need to give you a backstory. What's your backstory? So I think I just chucked together like a paragraph of, you know, oh, we met Neil Armstrong when he came to the moon and he told us this story about, you know, grandmas being eaten by wolves. So we thought we'd come to save them, but we really like bananas, you know, just total nonsense. And they were just like, yeah, that sounds great. So
I'm not a dancer at all. I'm not like Ben that actually have been dancing on stage before and know how to look cool. I just know that, you know, even if you look stupid on stage, if more people do exactly the same thing, it will kind of look cool. So that's Well, I wanted us to have a kind of a weird dance, but as long as we all do the same, it will kind of look cool, you know?
Was there any moment when the when you were worried that you were going to be revealed?
So down in Torino, I was sitting in a cafe just nearby the hotel. Then I just saw some people coming into the cafe, and I got this feeling it was journalists for some reason. I heard them speak Norwegian, and then I just hurried up. I had this hoodie and big-ass sunglasses and a face mask, and I took it on, and I just went out. I didn't even pay for the coffee. I just ran out of the cafe. And then they realized that I was probably a subwoofer, so they got a picture of me from behind.
The hype over here was crazy, and I think the other thing that really helped us was that because people weren't sure who we are, people started guessing, and they were guessing some very, very big celebrities in Norway and around the world. People like Alan Walker, Tix is a big star over here. They were thinking of him, Ylvis, the people that did the What Did the Fox Say? And all of these people, because they liked the project, they neither confirmed or denied that it was them. So we were getting all of this amazing publicity without having to do anything at all.
I bet you are relieved to not have to wear the yellow full face mask as often now, because I'm sure you'll make some appearances as subwoofer, right?
We're straight out to, we've got so many gigs coming in. We've got one this weekend, then we go to Iceland, then we go to Barcelona, then we go to the UK. We've got some UK gigs around Eurovision time. We've just written a children's book that is being released in August. So it's very much like business as usual type of thing. But we actually get to also be a part of it rather than it just being Jim and Keith of Subwoofer. There's sort of more elements to it now.
Ben, you went on tour last year with A1, and that was after Eurovision. So did you have anyone in the crowd with inflatable bananas or signs going, "You're Subwoofer"?
Of course. You know, like when we say, "Oh, any requests or whatever," of course, "Give That Wolf a Banana" was top of the list of people shouting out. Because I think, you know, like I said before, if you've ever heard an A1 song, as soon as "Give That Wolf a Banana" comes on, you know it's my voice. It's you know, it's great. But I think that's one of the intriguing things about Masked Singer is that I remember even, you know, when Morten Harkett, for example, did Masked Singer in the UK, it was very, very clear that it was Morten Harkett. But if somebody says, maybe it's not, maybe it's whoever else, it does put a shred of doubt into your brain, and then your brain does weird things and starts going, oh, maybe it's not, maybe it is somebody else. But I think that, you know, obviously hardcore A1 fans, there was no fooling them.
Did you always decide that it would be a year?
We started thinking about this maybe a couple of months ago. It's now or never, because we felt like the reveal was perfect. It couldn't went any better. So, it was the right moment.
You had such a unique Eurovision experience from the artist's point of view. What was both your highlight of being at Eurovision? What did you love?
I'll tell you what I love about what Subwoofer has like brought me and brought to my entire life, actually, not just the Eurovision, is that I kind of feel like I'm 42 this year, and I've had a really amazing career with A1 and stuff like that. And, you know, I've now got a kid and just got married and stuff. And I kind of felt like career-wise, I kind of done everything that I would want to experience, and everything else was just, you know, it's great still touring with A1. It's great writing songs for other people. It's great. I'm very fortunate that I can, you know, have always been able to live off music and never had to have another job and stuff. But I did kind of feel a bit like, wow, have I sort of done everything that I could possibly think of? Have I fulfilled every avenue? And doing Eurovision was never on my list of things to do. And then suddenly the opportunity is kind of there on a plate for me. And it's honestly, I mean, you know, you've been there yourself, like the circus of Eurovision is like no other. And doing it in the way that Subwoofer did was just something that nobody else would ever understand. Or I can tell you till the cows come home of how it was, but only really me, Gauta, and the people that were performing with us will ever really know how that felt. And I really appreciate that, what that's given me, just an experience that I never thought I wanted, I never thought about it, and it's something that I'll sort of treasure forever, really.
What about you, Gal? So what was your one highlight? If you had to pick something that happened in Turin, would it be performing at the grand final?
For me, I've been an artist in Norway for so many years now, kind of doing the same in many years. And the last years, I haven't had like big dreams of being a big artist outside of Norway. But when you're standing there on that big stage and suddenly you're actually singing for like 200 millions or what it is. And the crazy thing, I wasn't even nervous. I guess it's because I was under a mask. So yeah, it was a really big moment.
You never took the mickey out of Eurovision. And actually, when we were at Eurovision in Turin, nobody was snobby about what you guys were doing. It was a really friendly atmosphere. Everybody seemed to be getting on and everybody enjoyed what you were doing.
The fine line, we were talking a lot about that. The fine line between, you know, cool in the right way. But I also must say that we have gotten so much love, as you just said, from everyone. And it's been so nice for us. And so, yeah, for all the people that watch this, thank you very much from our hearts. You've been great.
Ben and Gauta revealed finally as Subwoofer. Thank you so much for finally coming on the podcast. Can talk to you as normal people rather than as Keith and Jim. But you'll always be the Keith and Jim, won't you?
In our hearts, yeah. And also, you know, like I say, the nice thing about this project is it does live on. You know, just, I mean, even on our social media and stuff like that, it's just exploded after the reveal even more than we did when we were unrevealed. So we're definitely not gonna stop the train here.
I'm actually pretty sure we will have to dress up as Keith and Jim, even though we are 70 years.
Don't you agree? They've just been brilliant, haven't they? They were a real highlight of Turin. And like we were talking about, they just threw themselves into Eurovision and made a success of it. And they stood out. They continue to stand out. Everybody knows that song. And it's kind of nice that they are not ending Subwoofer, that they will be continuing it for a very long time.
Interviews, news, legends. This is the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast from the EBU.
Coming up, we will be talking to Joker Out, who are representing Slovenia. But first, we're going to head to Tbilisi, the capital of Georgia, which is a country that hasn't qualified for the final since 2016. They are hoping to change things this year with Iru. She's won the Voice of Georgia and therefore the right to sing in Liverpool. Now, the reason there is such high hopes this year that she can change things, Iru is a winner of Junior Eurovision. She was a member of Candy back in 2011, who won with Candy Music. Georgia have won Junior three times, and they are hoping to bring a bit of that success to the main contest.
Hello, everyone. I'm Iru from Georgia, and I'm going to be representing Georgia on Eurovision 2023. Very excited because it has been my dream since 2011 when I won with my group, Candy Group. It was amazing, seriously. I'm so honored and so glad that I'm going to be representing Georgia.
You had a really long route to Eurovision because you had to go through about five or six rounds of The Voice in Georgia. How was that experience on The Voice?
It was my first time entering that kind of competition where I had to sing live every single week. It was such a hard work, to be honest, because we had to prepare the song and the performance like within like 3 days, because then we had like recordings, interviews and stuff. So there was not a lot of time, but we still managed, and it was the best experience I could have ever asked for as a performer, because it taught me a lot.
It's obvious that you are a Eurovision fan because you sang on The Voice, Rise Like a Phoenix and Euphoria in the final, and your performances, if people have seen them, they were honouring the original performances, weren't they? And the look and the styling and the movement.
It was very nerve-wracking for me to perform one of the best songs from Eurovision. Of course, it was such an amazing experience as well, because I had to sing, I got to sing their songs. Like, everybody's telling me that we pulled it off.
Take us back to 2011 and when you performed with Candy. So you were 11 years old and that was a huge stage. You were part of the girl group. Was it always something that you wanted to do ever since you were even younger, to perform and sing?
Yes, it was, to perform and sing, but I could never imagine that I would just like stay on that stage, that big of a stage. When I got selected for the group, I had no idea what I was doing, where I was going, because I didn't really know Eurovision that much. My girls, like, they were older than me because I was 10 back then. And then on my birthday, it was my birthday when we won, I had just gotten 11.
What have the girls said about you representing Georgia at the main Eurovision now? What did you get any messages from them, or did they get in touch?
Yes, one of them was with me on the final day and she was supporting me live. But everybody texted me and they're so happy and they're wishing me such a great luck on Eurovision. They believe in me, so it's really important to me.
Yeah, and you've obviously stayed in touch with them, and all five of you were back on stage just before Christmas, weren't you, in Yerevan?
Yes.
Was that a nice moment to reunite?
Oh, we got to just reunite, like, all of us, not only just Candy Girls, but, like, all of the, like, participants and the winners. And we were so happy when we saw, like, all of them, and we got to just, like, talk to them and just have fun with them. It was so cool.
Georgia are very, very good at Junior Eurovision. They have won it three times, and you came third in Yerevan, and you were part of the act because you co-wrote that track. But
yes,
in adult Eurovision, Georgia haven't ever done amazingly well. I'm just wondering whether you are hoping to bring some of that junior magic for Georgia to the adult competition. Is that your aim?
Yes, of course, it is my dream, my aim, my goal to bring all the magic to the adult Eurovision. Plus, it's not only me, but like the person who is writing and who's responsible for all the junior songs is going to be writing my song. So I think that like tells a lot that we are going to be on like a very high level this year.
If people listening don't know who that is, can you explain what his name is and just how amazing a songwriter he is?
So his name is Gigak Ukhyanidze. He has been working on Eurovision, Junior Eurovision, since Bzikebi. And he has done amazing on Junior Eurovision. And now it's going to be his first time writing the adult Eurovision, and he's so excited to work with me. I'm so honored to work with them as well.
So how is the song coming along? How's it going?
Oh, it's been great. Like, we've been working on this song like since they announced that I was the winner. The next day I was rushed to the studio and we were like, what do we do? Like, what do we do with this? We have like such a very, very, very short amount of time left. And so like we are trying our best. And we have ideas, of course, and hopefully we execute them the way we want to.
You as a performer, do you like the big soaring ballads? Are you more of a up-tempo, choreographed performer? Do you like doing both? Is it hard to choose which route you're going to go down?
I really want the song to be very strong, you know, to give like very strong vibes to it. So I don't know, but hopefully it's gonna like we can just like mix all together and just like create something very powerful.
This is obvious. You want to show off your voice, don't you?
Oh, yes, of course. Yes, the voice and my, I don't know, like the choreo and everything. I just really want to put everything in there because I just want it to be the best song from Georgia.
Do you watch it every year? Do you watch it with your friends? Do you all gather together? Do you have a routine and a ritual?
Yes, actually, fun fact, I always watch it with Candy Girls. We just like, I don't know, get together someplace and then we hang out together. We have all the snacks and everything prepared for the show.
And I suppose you always want Georgia to do well, but for the last couple of years, you haven't got to the final, so... You know, hopefully. Is there a bit of pressure this year, do you think, to try to get to the final?
Oh, my God. Yes. Let me tell you about that. It's so much pressure. Yes, because like everybody's like talking about how much we haven't actually had a luck to go to the finals. So this year, hopefully, I'm gonna do my best. Not only me, but like the team, you know, the delegation. We're all trying our best to go to the finals this year. So hopefully we'll do great.
What are you gonna be doing between now and May to prepare for Eurovision? Are you quite strict with yourself?
Yes, I am very pushy. Very strict on myself. So yes, I think I'm just going to have a very interesting schedule. But I also really want to add that I'm taking masters. So I'm going to be studying a lot as well.
So you're studying as well at the moment. So you've been doing that alongside all your performing.
I didn't tell anybody, but I had finals during the show, during the of the competition. I was studying when everybody was just like running around me. Yes.
How did you find that?
Oh my gosh, I passed every five subjects. I had five finals. Oh my God, I'm really proud of myself in that aspect because I pulled it off. And I don't know, when you're super busy, you don't actually understand how much you're doing, you know? Right now, I'm taking public relations, you know, master's in public relations, which is really interesting and really close to my, my profession.
Yeah, it is.
Yes, and so I love just learning a lot. So yeah.
Do you have more studying to do between now and May, or are you taking a pause and a break?
No, I'm not taking a pause. I said I'm pushy, so I'm gonna do this.
A final question: when you look back at Candy from 2011, when you watch it on YouTube, what do you feel when you see that performance?
I feel so much like warmth in my heart because I always remember how much work we put in there. You know, at the time. We would just like have rehearsals like 10 hours a day. I was so little, so young. I'm still young. I'm not saying I'm not, but it's just like, you know, I was 10 years old and I don't know, like I have a brother, he's about to be 10 years old. And when I look at him, I go like, oh my gosh, I was like your age when I did that on that stage. I'm really scared to go on the big stage right now. And so like back then I was not scared at all. I was like, really involved for that, but like I feel really proud of all the girls very, very happy and excited and thankful for the opportunity that I got to experience.
I bet that you all still know that choreo off by heart. That's like ever gonna forget it.
Never. I'm gonna perform somewhere when I go to Liverpool. I'm just gonna turn it on and just be like, Candy. yes, it's gonna be all in there.
That was Iru, and we should hear the song in the next few weeks. Now, Georgia are an interesting country because they've never really had that one big moment at Eurovision, you know, that top five placing. The highest they've come is ninth. So I wanted to find out a bit more about the plans the country has to turn things around as we talk about pressing that reset button. So I went straight to the top.
Hello, everyone. So I'm Natia Chernieradze. I work for Georgian Public Broadcaster. I work for Eurovision Project at GPB, and I'm working as a head of delegation of Junior and Big Eurovision as well.
So you are very much the person to talk to when it comes to anything related to Georgia and Eurovision. What is your mission this year?
Though for the big Eurovision, Georgia is not very successful for the last 4 years, I think so. We tried to represent some experimental projects because Georgia has a very big history of music and Georgia has a diversity in music. So, I mean, culturally. Musically, and that's why we were bringing some different type of music for the Eurovision. Yes, maybe we are not qualified, and that's very bad. But anyway, we give the Europe and other people, other nations, the possibility to know a different type of Georgian music, which is, I think, is very important.
It's so important. It shows authenticity and it puts a spotlight onto what your country produces. But I would say that in junior Eurovision, Georgia is incredibly successful and is probably the most successful country.
The reason why we are good at junior is that we have these diverse stagings all the time that underline the culture of Georgia and all the aspects. But to be honest, maybe because children are more talented than adults in Georgia. This is a joke, of course. But I don't know. There is no any special formula.
What would it mean to you if Georgia qualified for the final this year?
If we qualify this year, it would be a big success, not only for me, but for the country as well. Yeah, as much as I'm saying that the experimental music, this and that, yes, I think that anyway, it's time to qualify, that the qualifying, this the competition is not only to participate. So it's time to qualify and to go forward.
How much are you looking forward to Liverpool?
We're looking forward to Liverpool. We already, even from today, from Monday before this interview, I had a lot of meetings with Euros producers, with the composer, with the entire staff. So we are already started working. And I think that I hope that the presentation they brought and the idea and the main meaning and the message we're bringing, we're going to bring on the Eurovision, will be liked by many people. And I'm sure that this year we will be in the final.
Thank you to Nadia from Georgia, the head of delegation. We will see what happens. Now it's time to get to know five Slovenians. They are Bojan, Nats, Jan, Chris and Yuri. They are Joker Out, one of the country's best known bands, and they've now debuted the song Carpe Diem, which is what they will be singing at Eurovision. So a big hi to Joker Out. And I've got to start by asking you, how did you feel about debuting the song? Because you guys did it on national Slovenian television.
We kind of did not feel any pressure until the last 2 hours before the show went on. Then just a little bit of anxiety just creeped in and we could see in each other's eyes that we're okay, this is getting serious now.
Yeah, once you open that door, there's no closing it. You're in for months and months now until Liverpool, aren't you? There's no backing out.
We've exposed ourselves to the world now, but the world has been very kind as of now. The feedback is really great, especially from other countries.
Now, just before Christmas, I interviewed Tomáš from Sestria because it was 20 years since he performed at Eurovision. And he, at that point, knew that you guys were going to represent Slovenia, but he kept quiet. He just said he was very, very excited about who it was going to be. And then it was revealed that it was you five. How long have you been thinking about doing Eurovision? And when did you make the decision?
We're all fans of Eurovision since we were little kids, but we really started thinking about Eurovision maybe in the last half year, because before that we didn't really feel like we were adequately equipped or if it was the right time to do it. But then we decided we want to go to participate in the national selection. We were starting to create a song. And when we called up, they were like, what about you guys just go directly to Liverpool? And we were like, well.
One of my first memories as a child is actually watching Eurovision with my family in 2004 when Ruslana won.
Wild Dances, Ukraine, the winner, obviously. Is that your favorite, Jan, of all time?
Oh, favorite of all time. I think my favorite Slovenian entry would be Someone You've Risen by Sestre.
Yeah, incredible.
That's still a huge hit in Slovenia. Like, still,
it's an evergreen.
Yeah.
You sang it, didn't you, at the week? You sang it on Saturday.
You couldn't imagine a Eurovision show on Slovenian television without that song. That's what kind of song it is for Slovenia.
And Tomáš, he came on to sing with you as well, which is great.
He really supports us, which is great.
How long did it take you to write the song?
Well, the main idea for the song was kind of already made when we were called up, but that just meaning a basic demo in English that had no real sense. Then when we got called up, we decided to go to Hamburg to record it. And actually, the version that we have now is the result of those 12 days there.
Jure, tell us about the video. It looks really fun. Wasn't it filmed in like a really posh hotel in Slovenia?
Yeah, we filmed it in two hotels. It was fun working with our producer, Mark,
And we also had like 50 extras and only our friends who came to make a party.
Nats, can I ask you, how are you going to be preparing over the next couple of months? Have you got lots of gigs booked in?
No, we actually don't play till the end of Eurovision because we want to focus just on our performances.
But we're not going to be playing live.
Yeah, live.
So we're not going to be doing any shows here in Slovenia. But we are going to appear at all the Eurovision pre-parties. So
amazing.
We are going to play then.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we're also really excited to do that. So our next few months are only going to be Eurovision pre-parties and practicing for our performance.
Since you were announced, a lot of people listening would have been looking at your videos on YouTube and stuff. And you've been around as a band for about 6 years. Is that right? 6 or 7 years?
The original band that started the formation of Joe Corral. Now I'm the only one left from that band.
Okay.
And we called Chris and Jan to be our guitarists.
We had a different band. And then Bojan came to one of our shows and listened to us. And he was like, wow.
Asked if people want to form a band. And of course we did.
And then later on, Jure joined us in 2021, yeah, beginning of 2021, has been with us for the past half year.
Chris, I was going to say, so when Bojan phoned you up and said, do you want to be in the band, did you leave him hanging for a few months, a few days, or did you say yes straight away?
Kind of did, because I thought we had a good thing going with that other band, but of course, it was Bojan. He was like the, from our generation, in my opinion, the best singer and songwriter, and I, in the end, I really didn't have no choice. Then to say yes.
He's persuasive.
Yeah, you could say that.
I literally called Jan up and was like, I remember this, Sergio, that was on a random parking place, and I just called him up at 10 o'clock and I was like, hey man, I was thinking, would you want to join our band? And there was just like silence for 3 seconds and...
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not? Let's see what happens.
Yeah.
And little did you know, all of you, that you'll be going to one of the biggest music events in the entire world. It's a big question, but what does it feel like to represent your country on the world stage?
Terrifying and exciting at the same time. I don't know, but I think we're going to seize the day.
Yes, seize the day.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good plug for the song, isn't it? There we go. How much thought are you going to put into the performance itself? You got the song, but in terms of like your look and what you're going to do on stage, are you going to do something that is completely different to what you've done before? Or are you thinking of something really creative? Have you got to that stage yet?
Well, we are a live band and we work best on live concerts. So when we saw the stage for Liverpool and the fact that there is going to be people directly under the stage, we knew that it was very band friendly, and according to our energy, we are going to be able to perform a 3-minute concert of Joe Corral. So if we manage to get out the energy that we have on a live concert out on their stage, it will be a good show.
Finally, how have your friends and family reacted to you saying that you're going to be representing Slovenia at Eurovision? Who's been the most surprised and who's been the most supportive?
I don't think there's one person who hasn't been supportive of this. As we've already mentioned, we have a long history of like all of us watching Eurovision at home together. So I guess this is one of the biggest news a parent can hear from their kid, you know. And the next question was, of course, when do we get to Liverpool?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Can you get me tickets? Where am I staying? Who's coming? Are you going to have your parents come over to the UK, do you think? Do you think they want to see you?
Yes. Liverpool seems overbooked, so maybe they'll have to stay in Manchester or something.
So you heard it there. If you've got any mates or colleagues who live in the UK around Liverpool who are looking to, you know, rent their room around Eurovision time, don't give it to your friends. Go give it to Joe Corral's family, and I'm sure they'd be very, very appreciative. Big love. Thank you so much to the boys for coming onto the podcast. We're going to talk about two countries now who picked their acts very recently, but who I feel sit at different stages of their overall Eurovision journey. They are Ireland and Spain. Ireland have won the Eurovision Song Contest more than any other country, 7 times in total, but they've only qualified once in the last 10 years. Spain, on the other hand, came third last year with Chanel after years of struggling to get off the bottom half of the table. So, is there a renewed excitement in Spain? Joining me to talk about Ireland is Eurovision and entertainment journalist Emma Kelly. And from Spain, it is Victor Escudero, who has been covering the contest for more than 20 years. He works for the Eurovision.tv team and is also one of the commentators for Spanish broadcaster RTVE. Let's start with you, Victor. How was Benidorm Fest? You were there. Tell us about the winner.
You know, lately in Spain, everything about Eurovision is a big thing. And the winner is the only artist that was already participating last year, Blanca Paloma. She was absolutely amazing. Kind of flamenco-flavored song, but also with a modern beat to it. It has an electronic bass. And the lyrics are about her family and tradition. She talks about her grandma pushing her to, you know, to become the singer and to convey this message of flamenco to the world.
How has she been reacted to in Spain?
And from the comments I've seen, of course, there's a little bit of, you know, it's a bit polarizing, that type of entry, because some people think we shouldn't send something so local to Eurovision, while some other people are amazed that we dared to send it to the Eurovision Song Contest.
Emma, what did you think of the Spanish entry?
Spain did so well last year that maybe there's a bit more confidence now that you can send something truly Spanish and truly local. And we've seen, like, with some of the songs, it doesn't really matter if it's, like, considered to be a local kind of song. Some things just cut through.
Emma, it was at the point that we're recording this, it's just been a big weekend for you in Ireland because you had the Euro Song National Final. Wild Youth were selected on The Late 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 Show, which is an institution in Ireland for anyone who follows Eurovision and follows the national finals. How was it? Tell us about Wild Youth.
So Wild Youth have a bit of a growing audience in Ireland. They are on a bit of up and coming rising stars, and people would know their name in Ireland. Like, even if you kind of just listen to the radio in and out, you've heard Wild Youth songs. So I think going into Euro Song, they had a little bit of a leg up because they have a bit of a profile already. I think that Wild Youth did a really good job on the weekend. I think everyone did. I think we had a variety of songs. So I think it was a little bit polarizing on some of them. Like, if you liked a certain type of music, you're going to go that way. But I think Wild Youth did a really good job. Crowd-pleasing, Coldplay-ish kind of like stadium festival song with a really, really likable group at the heart of it. I think they're just really good guys. They look like they really want to be there and they're really taking this seriously and they like Eurovision, which I think is something that is very important for a representative, because I think that there is a bit more fire in the belly this year. I think that the Irish public got a bit of a boost last year with Brooke, and even though we didn't get into the final, I think that there was a bit more positivity around it, and I hope that that's going to carry on this year.
Emma, tell us, where do you think Ireland sit at the moment? Do you think there is still love for Eurovision in the country that has won it the most times ever?
There definitely is love for it, just based on that, because even if you haven't watched it in years and you stopped watching it after our heyday, you still have this love that you just think that we're still really good at it. Like, I do genuinely think, I'm like, no, we're brilliant at Eurovision. When we don't necessarily do well, I don't think that the Irish public thinks of that our kind of fault or the songs we're sending or the representatives. I think they genuinely think that it's like just a trend that, oh, we're robbed. Like, we're absolutely robbed, even if you're not following it that much. So I do think there is always going to be a love there. There's going to be that sort of nostalgia, I suppose, for this time where we just dominated the competition. And that, I think there is a sort of, like, a feeling that it will happen again. It's only a matter of time.
Would you like to see it go in a particular direction?
Yeah, I would really like us to send a song, Oscailge, in Irish. I think that the last couple of years, and like with the Spanish song this year, focusing in on what makes Ireland really Irish, I think is going to be the way to get us back into it, because we have been sending different songs with varying degrees of success. And with the way that Ireland is now, we're so proud of our culture and we're really proud of our language. And if you see at the Oscars this year, like, for several Irish language films, we nominated. And it's getting a bit of a resurgence, and I'd really love us to focus in on that and just send something completely in Irish and be like, right, this is us.
Victor, you have covered the ups and downs of Spain for so many years, and last year Chanel really hit the reset button for Spain. What did her coming third do for the Spanish Eurovision community?
Finally, after so many years, it did, because, you know, I have been doing this since the late 90s, and we had never been in the top five. So it came as a big surprise and a moment of happiness for all the Eurovision fans, which were already crazy about the song by the time of Eurovision. So when that moment happened, well, everyone was completely thrilled by the third place, and Chanel has been like our queen in the last year, thanks to that third place with Slow Mo. Our place, I think our moment in Eurovision is a bit different, because we last won in 1969. So it's like we kind of think that we cannot win. So any of these moments of happiness, like a third place, is enough for us. And we really hope we can maintain it for a while.
Do you think that Chanel doing so well gave new energy to the Spanish selection this year?
When the songs came in, well, people were expecting probably a second Slow Mo. But as it turned out, I mean, those similar songs were kind of dismissed along the way, and a very different song was chosen instead. And now let's see what happens.
Slow Mo was so good and still so fresh in everybody's minds. You don't want to just send like a less good version of that, because it's always going to be compared to that. So why not send something completely different? Like, it's like apples and oranges. Like, you're not going to be comparing Vladka directly to Chanel. And I think that's the best thing for any country, and particularly for Spain, after a song that's still played constantly in everyone's playlist.
Even though she didn't qualify last year, Brooke made an impact, didn't she, in Ireland? And she's still on TV now.
Yeah, it's actually amazing. Considering she didn't get past the semi-final, we're treating her like a winner, like she won the whole thing. Like, she's on Dancing with the Stars, doing really, really well. Did Slow Mo a samba to Slow Mo last night, which is absolutely incredible. And it's like at Pride last year, people were just doing lip syncs to That's Rich. And I think that's what kind of has people a bit more excited this year, because we're like, no, we did send a good song. It's a shame that she didn't get through. Well, that was it wasn't her fault. It wasn't the song's fault. I think that we did a really good job on the night. So yeah, it's great. And you know what? She's such a good representative for Ireland. Like, she loved being at Eurovision and I loved seeing her there. So hopefully Wild Youth still have that energy as well going into it this year.
Emma, what's your favourite ever Irish entry? And Victor, what's your favourite ever Spanish entry?
Niamh Kavanagh, my queen. She was actually on the Late Late Show for the Euro song. And I just like, do you know what? I just want to go out and party with Niamh.
Victor, your favourite Spanish entry of all time?
Okay, it's very easy to say Slow Mo right now, but I'm going to go a little bit back to another flamenco-inspired song that we sent in 1990 called Bandido, performed by a sisters duo called Azúcar Moreno, which was also quite experimental when it comes to flamenco and Spanish music. And I think it was a lovely song, and it was an amazing hit here in Spain.
Amazing. Victor, Emma, thank you so much for joining us on the official Eurovision Song Contest podcast to fly the flag for Ireland and Spain, and we will see you very soon.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve. See you in Liverpool.
There we go. A little bit of insight into Spain and Ireland for you. Before we go, you know what's going to happen. It is Eurovision on the spot.
Name?
John Steers.
Country you competed for?
Switzerland.
Year you competed?
2021.
Song?
First, Répondez-moi, and then Tout l'univers.
Your earliest Eurovision memory?
When I was 12, I was watching Eurovision with my cousin and my brother, and I was looking at the Albanian performance, 2011 or 12, Auri Lagace, Feel the Passion.
Where is your Eurovision outfit?
It is actually next to my coat, so I can see it almost every day to remember that amazing moment to me, but I mean to remind me to stay positive and to continue fighting for my dreams with me forever.
Who was the first winner of Eurovision you ever met?
I think it was Duncan 2 years ago. Yeah.
Who is your Eurovision hero?
I would say Laureen, because I think that her song is just like the basic from Eurovision. And she's like, yeah, I think she represents a lot of, from, I mean, of Eurovision.
What is the best thing about being a Eurovision participant?
It's just amazing to receive so much support from the Eurovision community. And yeah, I'm really proud of that support and of the show, the organization, the bubble, the love, the everything.
I told you it was a big episode, didn't I? It's only going to get busier from this point on. If you do want to get in touch with us, just find Eurovision across all your socials. Let us know who you want to hear from or any questions that you might have for anyone. Thank you to John's Tears, to Victor and Emma discussing Spain and Ireland, to the Joker Out guys from Slovenia, to Georgia's singer Iru and head of delegation Nadia, and to Ben and Gauta, aka Keith and Jim, who finally revealed themselves as Subwoofer. We are recording this just before so-called Super Saturday, when we will find out in one night who the acts are for Croatia, Italy, Latvia, Malta, Denmark, Estonia, and Romania. What an evening. But until next time, auf Wiedersehen.
To get the latest episode as soon as it drops, remember to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcast.